the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Happy Friday, and let's get another hour of Flames Talk underway. It is Friday, May 9th, and we're underway this hour on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. It's Steinberg along with you, and it's Friday, which means it's time for the Eric Francis Hour, as Eric joins us now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Hello, EF. How we doing, pal?
I'm fantastic. How are you, my man?
I'm good. It's great to hear your voice. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca with us for the next hour, the Eric Francis Hour, every Friday here on Flames Talk. And you know, you and I thought had a really fun hour last week. Talked about lots of different Flames things, and one thing we did not talk too much about was a contract extension for Matt Coronato. And then the very next day, Matt Coronato signs a 7-year contract extension with the Flames at $6.5 million, total value $45.5 million. And you know, I thought it was. I mean, first of all, I love the deal for both sides. I haven't seen very many negative reactions from Flames fans on this one. I think almost unanimously Flames fans were elated to see that news over the weekend. And, you know, it was definitely something we had talked about it leading up to our hour on Friday. Vickers and I had talked about it in one of our segments last week, because I did have it on my radar because it felt like, from a Flames standpoint, it was going to need to be the first domino to fall. And the number one kind of decision, especially when their RFAs were concerned, to make a determination on. And my understanding was the Flames were very open to going long-term with Coronato, but had to be the right number. Probably had to be a number that started with a 6 if they could get it done. And when it's all said and done, they get a 7-year extension with a number that starts with a 6, $6.5 million. And he's locked up now for the better part of the next decade. And that contract kicks in next year. What was your reaction when we found out about Matt Coronato signing a 7-year extension last weekend?
Yeah, I think it's encouraging because I see him as, you know, one of the first pillars being built around this new Flames, you know, plan, the direction. You know, I mean, yes, they've got Uyghur, signed long-term. They've got Sharon Govich, but this is that kid, that first one in that age-appropriate window that we keep talking about, where they've locked him up long-term. And look, the most important and most encouraging thing in all this is that Matt Coronato said the words that so many others haven't said for a long time here in Calgary, which is, I want to be in Calgary. I want to be with this organization. I like the direction they're going. I want to see where they're going. I want to see the new building. I want to be a part of it. And I want to move forward with everything that's being built here right now. We have not heard that messaging for a long, long, long time. And that is the most refreshing part of all of it. And so when you're starting the negotiation based with that in mind, then I think it's a whole lot easier to come up with a number. And when I came up with a number as palatable as the one they did, I think it quickly became a no-brainer, which is why it became why it got done so early. You know, asking Craig Conroy, are you this close to so many other guys that you got to get done? He said, no. This was a lot further along the way from our meeting, you know, based when the team was in New York. Mm-hmm. We met with his agent. We put the groundwork together. But again, none of that groundwork can be laid unless the player wants to be part of it long term. So that's the exciting thing for Flames fans. And to see a guy whose quotes, you know, make it very clear that, you know, he is so optimistic and wants to be part of this, that gets seen around the league. And that's great advertising for other future signings with the club.
Yeah, and I mean, that was maybe the most notable thing for me, too, is like, I don't think, of, well, in fact, I know that bridge deal was never really discussed. I mean, the Flames had some shorter-term options that they would have been ready to present, but the Coronado camp was thinking long-term right from the get-go when they, as you mentioned, had that sit-down while the Flames were on that New York trip. And so right from the get-go, it was very clear that Coronado and his side were really interested in a long-term deal. So instead of like going back and forth on a few different options, it was all like, okay, let's come to an agreement on the long-term number and what that looks like. So it became a situation where Craig Conroy and the Flames had to put the type of number on the table so that the Coronado camp wouldn't then be thinking to themselves, well, you know, instead of that, let's go shorter term and see if we can up that number in a couple of years. And that's where I wondered if it was going to, like, if you throw in excess of $40 to $50 million on the table for a guy with one full NHL season and he says yes, then great, you're loving it. If they still say no, we'd like to take our chances on a bridge deal and then reconvene in a couple of years, you say, okay, that's fine, and let's do that instead. But the fact that this was the number that that got the Coronado camp to forego betting on the player and going shorter term, I think it's a really sweet spot on both sides. And that's life-changing money for Coronado. And it is the type of deal that expires at an age that could allow Coronado to have another big ticket deal in 7 years. And for the Flames, I think it gives them really good value almost from the get-go, I feel like. But this looks like, or this feels like, one of those deals in a year or two where we're already thinking to ourselves, hey, yeah, that's pretty good value. And getting out in front of it worked really good for Calgary's cap. I think, as you said, it became a whole lot easier to come to middle ground when you knew right from the get-go that the player's side of things really wanted to commit long-term, and that allows you to just dial in and get the details right and eventually come to an agreement on something like this. And I think I think Saturday was a really significant day in the organization's history. I really do.
I do too, because I think this is a player who you're going to see on the last minute of pretty much every game all year long, because not only is he, if you're down a goal, of course he's on the ice. He's one of your first guys over the boards on the ice, because he's one of their best finishers, their third leading scorer. And, you know, as early as next year, probably going to be their leading scorer goals wise. But also, you know, the second thing that made all this possible, on top of a guy saying, look, I really want to be here long term, like, I'm not scared, I'm not one of these American players like everyone's scared of who wants to go back south as soon as possible. The second, you know, important part to make this deal possible, because when you say to me, you know, one full year in the NHL, I mean, he was kind of their 13th forward on day one of the season. He was in the minors after game six or whatever. That's kind of scary to put $40 million on a guy with just 1 year of experience. But the big thing is he proved over the course of this year, he's not just a guy who has upside as a finisher. He's already now proving he can finish. He's doing it as a 24-goal scorer, but he's also that guy who you're going to have on the ice in the end of games defensively too. Like, they asked him to work on his compete. They asked him to work on his skating. They asked him to work on his defensive play. All those three things he showed in spades playing alongside, you know, the two checkers on that back end line.
Yep.
And he became so important at both ends of the rink. That makes it a whole lot easier to say, okay, yes, anytime you sign anybody to a $40 million contract, it's a gamble, but the fact that we know he can play both ends of the ice, he's going to continue to work hard at both ends, that makes it a whole lot easier, because if one end fails, at least he's got the other one that you know that he's really good at. So he deserves a ton of credit for the way his game has evolved. And I can tell you from talking to his agent when he was at Harvard, and, you know, there was really not an expectation that he would ever play a game in the AHL. Like, not one single game. That was always the hope. I mean, every player hopes that they're never going to have to go down to the minors. And I think that they thought that that's probably the way it was going to be. I'm open to the possibility that it might not happen that way, but good on him for spending half a year last year in the minors, up and down, and then this year even getting sent down early and then coming back with a vengeance and proving, no,
those days are over. So
not only coming back with a vengeance, like he went, Francis, when they sent him, and it was a numbers game. It wasn't a merit thing. It was a numbers thing. But when he got sent down there early this year, like Coronado was not happy and told him, he's like, this is like, he went down there upset, went down there feeling like they were making a mistake, and yet still went to make sure that he was going to be a part of the Wranglers, still immediately integrated himself with that team and went in, got into two games, scored in both games. And then, you know, the unfortunate injury happens with Anthony Mantha, but that was the immediate, okay, there's a spot. Ended up being a week that he was down there. But like, that's what you want to see. Like, you don't want Matt Coronado to go down there, shrug his shoulders and say, oh, well, shucks, I guess I'll go. No, he was pissed. He felt he belonged in the NHL. He felt they were making a mistake, went down there, performed for a week in the American League, came back up, and then had his welcome to the NHL full-time moment a few weeks later, whatever it was, with that two-goal performance against Montreal, and really has never looked back since then. I'm with you, man. I give the kid a lot of credit for the way that he has put himself in the situation where signing a seven-year extension in excess of $45 million was like... Nobody's saying, what are they doing? Nobody's saying, like, this is crazy.
Nobody.
He was the guy who put himself in that situation. And when we talked last week, what did you call him? The most improved player of the season. And that improvement, rapid improvement, led to him getting a life-changing contract at the age of 22.
That's right. And so just play a hypothetical with me. If he didn't have the season he did this year where his progression was so immense and his impact was so, such a big one, just say he needed a contract after last year where he spent roughly half the season in the minors, back and forth between that and the big club, then you're not, then it's a massive gamble to go 7 years
for sure.
Or $40 million, and the Flames probably aren't doing it. And there is, that leads us to, I know we're not finished talking about Coronado, but that kind of leads us to Connor Zeri. Like, I don't think many people think
he's getting a bridge contract almost for sure, right?
I mean, exactly. And again, it's really no fault of his own. Look, when he was healthy, he didn't have the season he really wanted. But then also the fact that he wasn't healthy for so much of it, prohibited him from taking the same sort of strides that Matt Coronado did to set himself up for this sort of deal. So now, that's why I'm sure the player wants to go bridge. Probably the team would probably lean more towards going long-term because his stock is a little lower right now. But you're not going to see a long-term deal for Connor Zeri, I don't think. And it's because he didn't get a chance to do what Matt Coronado did and position himself that way. So that's different. And we could look at all the different RFAs and see how they positioned themselves going into the offseason for their next contract. But nobody did it better than Coronado, and that's why he was rewarded as such.
I just, from a Flames perspective, if this goes where I think we think it's going to go, I'm curious as to where you are on Coronado's ceiling, but I mean, I certainly believe that we're talking about a multiple 30-goal scorer, multiple-time 30-goal scorer in the NHL, and if it ends up going that way, and when I asked Craig Conroy about that, he said, I don't want to limit the guy, which I really thought was a good way of putting it too, but like, if we're talking about a guy who hits, 30 to 35 goals three or four times on this next contract, that $6.5 million is going to look like a real bargain and a real good price in really short order, isn't it?
Yeah, a couple of things on that really struck me when I was talking to Conroy about that. One is he said, I don't want to limit him, but boy, I played a lot of hockey with Mike Camilleri, and he kind of reminds me of Mike Camilleri. So I remember him playing with Camilleri and covered him through both of Camilleri's stints in Calgary. So he was a 39-goal scorer in the National Hockey League. So that's kind of, Conroy saying in a roundabout way, I think he could score upwards of, 35-plus. I think 35 is that number. Like, you peg a guy at 20, you peg a guy at 30. I'm pegging him at a 35-goal clip. I really think that's kind of, and don't really want to say that's a ceiling, but, boy, I think he can get there with, two or three years for sure. The other thing about him that I thought was, that Conroy said was, this is a guy who, now I'm losing my train of thought. I forgot the second thing that Conroy said. Oh God, he said something that was really interesting. It'll come to me, and I'll jump back in. I lost my train of thought.
What?
But he didn't want to limit him. But oh, that was the other thing. I'm sorry. He said if he comes back next year and scores 24, we're fine with that.
Yeah.
Like at the production he's at now, we're still fine with where he's at $6.5 million. Now, I think over, I don't know. I'll throw that back at you and say, if he's a 25 goal scorer every year between now, you know, consistently a 25 goal scorer right up until the end of his contract, is that still good value? Like, if he's killing off the final minutes of every game and playing defensively, then I would sure say it is. But we all think and believe that there's going to be a higher ceiling than that. The potential's higher. But I'll ask you that. If it's 24 goals, pretty much, if that's what it averages over the next 7 years, where does he stand in terms of value?
I still think you're okay with it. I really do. Like if we're talking about him playing on a line as important as he played on this past year, and I think that we all agree the best incarnation of Backlund's line or Backlund and Coleman's line was with Coronado on it. And I know Coronado played elsewhere at different times, but I think the best look we saw for all three of those guys was Backlund between Coleman and Coronado. If he continues to be a 20 to 30 goal guy playing in that role and impacting the game in that way, I think you're fine with $6.5 million. Honestly, Francis, in 3 years' time, 20 goal scorers are probably in the $6 million range anyway, with the way the cap is jumping up in such large increments every year. Like, just in terms of what guys are getting paid, I don't think $6.5 million, even going into next year, is a vast overpay for Matt Coronado. So yeah, I'm like where Craig is. Like, if what he is this year is what he is for the next 7 years, I still don't think you mind the contract.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all think it's, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So in so many ways, and again, remember when they signed Blake Coleman, and I think it's right around $5 million a year. Now, you were paying for so much more than just a 20-goal scorer, but they always said Blake is a 20, 22, 25-goal scorer, and for $5 million a year, and they signed that, what, 4 years ago now? 3 or 4 years ago. Now, granted, he brings so many more intangibles. He's got two cups, and you're bringing that experience, the leadership. You're paying for a whole lot more than just a 20-goal scorer, but you know, a $5 million player 4 years ago is what now? Like, isn't that a $7.5 million player now? Or $6.5 million, the way the cap's gone up. And of course, if the cap continues to go up the way everyone kind of expects it does, if we don't have another COVID shutdown or another lockout.
You watch your mouth.
Yeah, sorry, bud. You know, that thing's just going to continue to grow in leaps and bounds, and to the point where anybody who's locked up long-term right now, within reason, will look like a bargain in 5 years from now.
And then there's the whole idea of the Coronado side too. Like, we're, you know, and I think that just the natural on the outside, the natural, because you cheer for the team and you cover the team, the natural instinct is always to start thinking about how this is, you know, how this impacts the team. And is this good for the team? And, you know, how does each contract, impact the team's salary cap. But I honestly think this is a really good bet on the Coronado side as well, because of his age, because he came out after just 2 years of college. I think you're talking about a nice potential big picture win for the Coronado camp as well. So he just banks $45.5 million before taxes, but $45.5 million he banks on this deal, guaranteed. He'll be 29 when he's an unrestricted free agent. And the way Coronado plays isn't based on blazing speed and isn't based on things that we sometimes see recede a little bit as guys hit their late 20s, early 30s. With Coronado's IQ, work ethic, the way that he's all about, you know, really It's more about power and more about work ethic in terms of where he gets to point A, point B, as opposed to just natural blinding speed. And then on top of that, his high-end shot, like, I think Coronado's still a very effective NHLer in his late 20s. So at 29, he enters unrestricted free agency, or at 29, he enters extension talks with the Flames. I think you can be talking about another 4, 5, 6 year extension on top of that. So you're talking about anywhere between 11, 12, 13 years of prime earning for a guy like Coronado with this deal. Whereas if he signs a bridge of 2 years, then signs a big 8 year deal, well, now we're talking about a guy who is 32 when his contract comes to an end. And that's when teams get a little bit more shy. And you know, maybe you're looking at a 2, 3 year deal as opposed to something longer. So I think in the big picture, this works out really well for the Coronado camp as well.
Yeah, I agree with the way that they've timed it all out. And, you know, there's a guy with what many believe in the organization, and I, from what I've seen, I agree with that. You know, he's high character. You know, he listens. He wants to get better. He's put in the work. He's bought into what this leadership group has really done for him. Like, the biggest thing that he wanted to say to me when I talked to him, you know, I said, "You going out to celebrate?" He said, "Yeah, I'm going out with the family." I said, "You probably should pay, right?" And he said, "Yeah, you're probably right." I hadn't thought of that. But he, because we know he's pretty soft-spoken and quiet. But he wanted to, you know, thank his family and everything. But he could not thank Coleman and Backlund
for what
they've done. You talked to him too, right? Same story.
Same
like
thing.
Are there two better people in the organization? I know they're not the two best players on the Calgary Flames, but are there two better people in the organization that you can learn from, right? Those are high character, classy, smart individuals who have got by on all those traits, you know, and he bows down to them and wants to learn as much as he can from them. And boy, you couldn't ask for better teachers for a guy like that. And he's very thankful for them. And that's another part of the reason why he wanted to stay. He wanted to continue to playing with those guys and continue to learn and soak up as much of what they have to teach him. And, you know, this is a dressing room. We keep talking about culture. You and I just know on a daily basis, like, it's as good a room as I've ever covered in all my years. And I think you agree. And it's not just good guys, because people, you know, listening, I'll go, "Yeah, they're your buddies." No, they're not our buddies. It's not about that. It's just about good character people who you get a good vibe from and who are respectful. And that room is full of them. And he's definitely one of the, you know, he fits right in that mold. So it's a real nice fit in every possible way.
Yeah, it's a really nice deal. And maybe one thing that, to wrap up this part of the conversation, but one thing that maybe we didn't spend enough time on, and I know you definitely mentioned it and referenced it a little earlier, but EF, like, we're talking about a team that, and an organization that has seen, especially with American-born players, seen players decide not to stay here and decide that they would rather go elsewhere, you know, grass is greener, test free agency, you know, be okay with being traded, so on and so forth, from Johnny Gaudreau to Matthew Tkachuk to Noah Hanifin and others. This is one of those scenarios where, like, this is a real message sender to your players in the organization. Like, if you're Zane Parekh, right, and you just saw Matt Coronado sign a 7-year extension, you're like, "Hey, if I go out and I perform, this team's willing to invest in me. This team's willing to make me a part of the core." So I think to other young players, I think it's a message. I think it's a message to the players in that locker room right now that, hey, you know what? Guys are still wanting to be here, and one of our brightest young stars just committed. So if you're a Kadri, or if you're a Coleman, or if you're a Uyghur, and you're like thinking about, hey, where this team is going to go, you're like, "Hey, this guy just committed the next 7 years of his life to the organization." So I think it's a message sent to the rest of the locker room. And I think it's a message sent to the rest of the league too. Like, hey, guys still want to be there. And I think that's a really important win for the organization. You know, if he's not an American guy and he's from Red Deer and signs, it's still great. But the fact that here's a young guy from Long Island, New York, and he decides to commit the next 7 years of his career to a Western Canadian small market team, that's a massive, massive win for the organization, too. And I know that that's something that you brought up earlier, so I just wanted to I know that that's something that probably clicked in your head almost right away, too.
Yeah, like it's a tone setter to me too. Like for the, you know, it's all the more important that that's the first kind of thing they've done this summer, because it sets the tone for other people and around the league. And if they do decide to try and chase a free agent, which we all think is pretty unlikely, certainly a free agent of note, you know, it's just a powerful message around the league. And Conroy talks a lot about how guys talk. Players are our best advertisers. You know, they talk about what it's like here and the culture and the excitement and the building and the city and all that that's coming ahead. So these are all good things. And, hey, it wasn't all that long ago. We were sitting here going, I don't know, is Coronado going to go back for another year at Harvard? Like, are we going to see another guy, an Adam Fox? Like, that was a conversation not too long ago. And now we're looking at a guy who said, no, I never contemplated not coming. And also on top of that, I want to be here for, you know, more than a decade. So that's pretty cool.
I asked him that question when he joined us on Monday, Eric. And you know, it's funny because I'll always remember an intrepid reporter writing for Sportsnet.ca getting on a Zoom call at the 2021 NHL draft. And that intrepid Sportsnet.ca reporter, the first question he asked Matt Coronado was, hey, do you think you'll sign here long term, or like, are you going to leave? Because we had just gone through the Adam Fox situation in this market. Of course, I'm referencing you. That was the first question that Matt Coronado got asked on his general Zoom call after he was drafted in the first round. And so, and that, I'm not taking a pot shot at you at all, because that was
legit.
It's one of the things that's on a lot of Flames fans' mind, and they just drafted another American guy. Like, is he going to stay? And so I asked him about that on Monday, and I said, like, you were getting questions like minutes after you were drafted about this. He's like, yeah, I was so grateful to the Flames for drafting me that it was never a consideration. I always wanted to sign, and I always wanted to be a Flame. And then I got to the city, and after my first development camp, I was like, I love the city. I want to be here. And it's just, I think that that endears you to this group of fans. It endears you to any group of fans, but I think it endears him that much more to this group of fans who have been jilted so many times, right? I think I think that this one's going to make an impact with Flames fans for a while.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, that was the first question I asked Conroy after he drafted Coronado, which was, are you worried? And he said, look, there are no guarantees in life, like no guarantees at all, but he was the best guy available at the time. We think that if we treat him right and, you know, he continues to, if he develops and all this, then that we think that we can make him stay. And that there again is another example of, I think, like Craig Conroy's relationship with these players is such that I think these guys want us to be, you know, they feel a connection with Craig Conroy. Craig Conroy is American. Craig Conroy knows all about the American situation, and he still went out and drafted this kid and showed a lot of faith in him. And you're right. It's so heartening to hear a kid say, look, they put their faith in me, and I want to return that by staying here long term and making this a great relationship. So, yeah, I'm happy to have asked that question first, because it was the obvious question. And maybe at the time, Coronado's probably going, who is this jerk? I haven't even got my cap sized yet, and he's asking me if I'm going to leave, if I'm not going to show up in Calgary. But It's a legit question. This organization has been burned, and you read out the list earlier.
Yeah, and I didn't even mention Adam Fox when I was reading out that list. I had totally forgotten about the Fox situation, which was much more fresh at that time when he was drafted. Okay, Eric, let's before we hit our first pause, and I do want to transition to another interesting topic on top of this, but just before we do that, where were you? Where were you on Thursday night, my friend?
Yeah, good. You know what? Thanks. I was at the Centennial Cup, first game of 11 nights at the Centennial Cup down at Max Bell. And you know, it was sold out. You know, there were some empty seats, but, you know, corporately it's sold out the first night. Great support so far, but keep it going, Calgary. It's incredible hockey. Like, if this city packs the arena for things like the Circle K, like, this is significantly better and bigger hockey than that. If you haven't gone or you don't have plans to go, get out there over the next 11 days. There's so many great teams. There's so many great talents. Canucks won last night. What was really cool is Riley Bracco scored the game-winning goal, and Ken Bracco Arena is named after his grandfather, which is a really cool moment. And you know, thinking of his dad at this time and all this, it's really cool. So, but it was a bit of a reunion of sorts for the 1995 Calgary Canucks team that won the Centennial Cup. And I know most people listening would have no idea probably what I've been talking about, but in 95, there was an NHL lockout. This is when people read newspapers and these guys were front page every day, and the city fell in love with them to the point where I remember a businessman stepped up and made sure that it was paid for on cable 10, Shaw cable 10. Remember that? So that they could watch this team in the final, because the whole city was kind of following along with them. There were scalpers outside of Max Bell. People were three deep, and it was a team of Calgarians who paid for the privilege of playing junior A hockey. And they were playing all these teams across the country that were, you know, had much bigger budgets and had forever been poaching the best players out of Calgary. And the underdog came and beat all the 121 other teams in the country. Eight games they had to win or their season was over, and they won all eight, including the Centennial Cup final in Ottawa. An overtime winner by Jason Abramov. Anyway, got a chance to kind of get together with those guys last night. I felt a part of that group. It was the coolest thing I've ever covered in my career. And they're going into the Alberta Sports Hall of Fame this summer because of what they did. Mm-hmm. And because it was such a great story. And like I said, it was a big deal at the time. Never to happen again with, you know, the demise of newspapers and people reading, you know. Anyway, long story short, I'm proud of these guys. Was thrilled to see them all. A lot of them have turned into really great guys and successful businessmen and whatever. And I got to hang with them last night, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them going to the Hall of Fame this summer.
That's super cool, because I didn't know your connection to the Calgary Canucks. I know my connection to the Calgary Canucks and how cool it is to see the Centennial Cup in Calgary and at Max Bell as a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 18-year-old. That was my first ever job getting to do play-by-play, was doing all the home games for the Calgary Canucks. And you know, Max Bell was my second home for about 4 years, and it was a gentleman by the name of Bob Clark, who was a great friend to Ken Bracco, was the guy who started this initiative of having their games done on video, and got to know Kenny so well, and you know, just saw to see Ken Bracco at the Max Bell Center is like to see to see your parents at home, or like, it's just so familiar and so like right where a human being should be for Kenny Bracco. And so I didn't know that you had that connection to the Calgary Canucks. And so, anytime we can talk a little Canucks on this show, I'm all for it. So I'm glad you shared that.
No, I appreciate you saying it. It was like Norm at the bar at Cheers,
that was Ken.
Or Cliff Clavin. That was Kenny. And I'm glad his legacy lives on, and he'd be thrilled to be hosting this tournament. You know, Kerry's been helping keep that organization alive forever, and it's great that they're having their moment. I was so thrilled to see them win last night. But, you know, it is weird. I get asked all the time, what's the coolest thing you've ever covered in your career? And I've been all over the world covering Olympics and majors and all these other things, and I always tell them it was the 95 Cup run. I can't really explain it much more than that, other than I just tried. But I was only 24 at the time. The kids were all 18, 19. And I kind of felt like I was on the journey with them. And the whole city kind of fell in love with them over the course of a two-month span. Completely unexpected and kind of never to happen again. But it was really cool. Anyway, I always try to promote them because I do think it's the most entertaining brand of hockey, too, in the city. I will say that. I'll put it up against the Wranglers, the Hitmen. I'll put it up against all of it. Those kids are balls to the wall every single game. And they're just playing because they love it so much. And I think it's the most entertaining brand of hockey there is.
Centennial Cup continues until May 18th, all at Max Bell, nine teams, and that is the best junior A hockey teams across the country. The Calgary Canucks opened their tournament with a 3-1 win over SJHL champion Melford on Thursday night. Centennial Cup with multiple games a day continues at Max Bell until May 18th. It's Steinberg and Francis. It's the Eric Francis Hour, and it's coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Friday, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flamestock is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Don't have a lot of time, and so maybe can defer some of this conversation into next week, but I did want to, as we continue along on the Eric Francis Hour, it's Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. I did want to get your perspective on the next long-term deal for the Flames potentially. So Matt Coronato signs a 7-year extension last weekend, and the guy that is right there in the same age range as Matt is Dustin Wolf, who just turned 24 last month and just was named a Calder Trophy finalist earlier this week. I know that you were shocked that he was named a Calder Trophy finalist and were completely against that, but we all knew that he was going to be a Calder Trophy finalist, and what a deserving nod for Dustin Wolf. Now, he's not on an expiring contract. Like, he's got 1 year left on his deal, but as early as July 1st, the Flames could sign him to a long-term extension if the desire is there on the Wolf side of things. But I guess, Francis, you're not as convinced that that one goes the same direction in the near future. Hey, is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. I mean, I don't see – I said this about Rasmus Anderson. I'll say the same thing about Wolf, even though they're very different situations. Like, why would a player sign a year early with the cap rising and all that we know about, you know, all the space the Flames have? Like, why would anyone sign a year ahead of time? Everything, you know, a rising tide floats all boats. So a guy who signs a contract this year is leaving money on the table that he could have got next year when everything gets inflated. So that's the first thing. But even if Wolf did need a contract this year, I think he is just such a confident and talented guy that I think he'd be so hell-bent on betting on himself that he would be way more apt to signing a bridge deal, betting on himself, heightening his numbers and heightening his value, and then cash in for the 8-year deal, you know, whatever that looks like in 2 or 3 years, when theoretically, and I'm sure in his mind, he will have then competed for a couple of Vezinas at that point in time, maybe even won one. I mean, and I don't say this in a negative way, he's got so much confidence, and rightly so. I don't know why you'd settle, like, signing early or signing for anything less than you think is top dollar, I think would be considered settling for Dustin Wolf. Mm. And I just don't see it. I don't see it happening. No chance in my mind.
I mean, what about next summer? Like, when the contract's up?
Well, let's see what sort of season he has. If he has even better numbers than he did this year, which, you know,
could happen.
Certainly trending that, which could easily happen. Then he's in position to sign for even more, and he might be more comfortable signing for even more. So you and I were talking earlier today about, you know, one of the obvious comparables, which is Jeremy Swayman signing an eight-year deal times $8.25 million. And if you look at his stats the year before he signed, so last year, compared to the stats that Dustin Wolf put up this year, they are shockingly similar in wins, losses, save percentage, goals against average. They are eerily similar. So there's your template. And that, by the time he signs a contract next year, that will have been a 2-year-old template, 8 by 8.25. So in his mind, he's probably thinking, wait one more year, put up even better numbers, and then it's like a slam dunk that he'd be looking at 8 times 9 or 8 times 9.5.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. And then he might consider it, for sure. But I think he knows that he can be even better. And if he can't, even if he can't, doesn't matter. He can revert back to these numbers from this year and still get close to $8 million a year if he wants to sign long term, sign a Swayman deal. So I just don't see what the rush is, you know, and I wouldn't understand the logic if he signed anything longer than 2 or 3 years next year.
What if they put the Swayman deal in front of him on July 1st?
I still think he could get more. And I think he would believe he could get more because I think he believes he can put up better numbers than he did this year. You know, again, it all kind of, it's because of his personality. I say a lot of this.
Yeah.
There are some people who would say, dude, you're a seventh round draft pick. Some people still think you're undersized. Someone just offered you $64 million times 8 years. You're set for life. Your grandchildren's grandchildren are set for life. Sign the damn paper. But that's not Dustin Wolf. And again, that's not a slam on him. That's not taking a shot at him. That's just because I think he is so full of confidence, and it's made him who he is and how good he is. So I think he's going to bet on himself every time. And I think that means just cooling his jets, resisting a nice long-term offer, knowing that in plus will still be there.
Yeah. If I'm the Flames, I'm at the very least trying to put the type of deal that would make him. And here's the other thing is he's got a pretty high powered agent, just that Pat Brisson guy, just like the McKinnon and Crosby agent. You know, he's got some experience negotiating some pretty big deals. But I would, at the very least, I would want to make sure that come July 1st, I put a deal on the table that makes them think. And if they still say, no, we'd rather wait until next summer, then I'd say, absolutely, we get it. But at the very least, we wanted to let you know how highly we value this young man. And this is what we are prepared to do right now with just 1 year under his belt. And we very, very much respect the fact that you think that you could, you know, have more leverage in a year's time. And we respect that. And you're probably right. But we wanted to put this on the table so at the very least you knew where we were at. And so if I'm Craig Conroy and I'm the Flames, I'm putting a few different contracts on the table. I'm putting an 8, I'm putting a 6, I'm putting, you know, a 5-year deal, all with very convincing numbers on the table, and making them turn it down is what I'm doing. And not being angry if they do turn it down. But I think that's a really good show of faith. And so I'm putting the Swayman deal on the table. I might even go to 8.5. I'm putting, you know, $68 million on the table saying, this is how we value you. And if Pat and Dustin still say, we think that we can actually be a little bit better off in a year's time, or we would rather sign a 2-year deal right now and give us 3 years of time to build up an even larger resume, then you absolutely do that. But I think that by putting that on the table, I think it's a really important gesture to continue. We just spent the first part of this hour talking about Matt Coronato and the message that it sends that here's an American guy who wants to commit long-term to the Flames. Well, I think if the Flames do what I'm talking about, I think it just continues to build that bond and say, this is what we think of you. This is how much we want you to be a part of this organization for the rest of your career. Make him think and make sure that he knows that he is the priority going forward. At the very least, I think you need to do that if you're the Flames.
Yeah, and I think that's very well said. And I think that this is a young man who feels a lot like Matt Coronato, where he's just very thankful for all the things that the organization has done for him. I would say he's probably more thankful because 4 picks later and he wouldn't have been drafted. and the Flames took a chance on him. And he's always been very, very respectful when he speaks of how appreciative he is of that opportunity to put him in a position right now where, yeah, you're probably right. They probably would, should, and probably will offer him 8 times 8 and change, you know, very soon if they haven't already done that. And all that said, where I say I don't think he's going to take it, you know, especially because he has such a high-powered agent who, you know, he's always looking for people to help raise the bar for everybody else.
Yeah.
And Wolf could be that guy. He could raise the bar for all the other seventh-rounders out there. but he, you know, all that said, and the fact that I don't think he'll do it, and all the reasons why I said I don't think he will, if we have a press release come out next Saturday and it says he signed 8 times 8.5, I wouldn't fault the kid. Who could fault anybody for saying, you know what, that's guaranteed money and no one can ever take that away from me no matter what happens from here on out. So it would still surprise me if he settled for anything less than a bridge deal, but I wouldn't blame him or say that he made a mistake if he accepted 8 times 8.5 or something like that.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, Francis, get the heck out of here, my friend. You have yourself a wonderful weekend, and I'm not here next week, so we'll have to reconvene. Yeah, I'm taking a little time off, so we can reconvene in a couple weeks' time.
Look, just because you're going to go spend every minute of every day at the Centennial Cup doesn't mean you have to take time off. You could broadcast from the arena.
Which we did on Thursday.
And I thank you for that. That's great. Okay, buddy, you have a great holiday. You deserve it.
Be well, pal. We'll talk soon. Thanks, as always, EF.
Thanks, bud.
Eric Francis is on Twitter, at Eric Francis. You can find him at sportsnet.ca and, of course, on Sportsnet Telecast for Flames games. He joins us every Friday here on Flames Talk on Sportsnet 960 The Fan as we start to wrap things up this hour. This hour has been, first of all, produced by Shan Vergie and Cam Hughes. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale is on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit calgarylockandsafe.com.